Hello and welcome to Adventures in Venueland, an EVMC podcast. Join us for this all-access pass backstage and behind the scenes with some of the brightest minds that cross the scope of the live event industry. I'm Dave Rettelberger.
And I'm Paul Hooper. We'll introduce you to incredible guests who journey with us as we dive deep into the world of venues, tours, festivals, and everything in between. Grab your laminate and meet us in Venueland.
Today's adventure takes us to New York, where we're going to check in with one of my favorite people. For 25 years, she's been traveling the globe, promoting events just about everywhere. She's the Senior Director of Winter Sports Events and Event Director for Stars on Ice, celebrating 25 years at IMG. Tammy Allen, welcome.
Thank you so much. Happy to be here.
You know, we've known you for so long. Paul and I were just talking that I said, are we sure we haven't had her as a guest earlier in the podcast? And he said he's been trying to get you on for a while, but glad you could make the time today.
No, happy to be here. I'm a bit of an introvert, so maybe that's the reason.
See, I would never know that. And let me just go ahead and jump into this, because if you are a person who's been to, you know, EVMC or, you know, previously EAMC sometime in the past, you know, many years, chances are that you ran into Tammy as Tammy, for many years, ran our first year sessions. I remember you ran it the year that I started.
Somehow you didn't scare Dave off. He's still around with us.
Yeah, so I would never think of you as an introvert.
No, it's true. You know what? I'm very good when I have a job and a purpose. I can be really focused. And when I feel like I have a job to do, I'm in it like 110%. And, you know, when it comes to EVMC and the conference, that's always been something that I've been really passionate about. And I did kind of jump on board pretty early to help with first time attendees. And maybe that's because socially, I'm not the person who might be just apt to run up to the group of people already standing together and kind of chatting and, you know, run up to say, hey, I'm the person who kind of thinks twice and slowly walks up. And so, you know, maybe that's one of the reasons that, you know, kind of the first time attendee group was so appealing to me, because I felt like if I could jump in with this great group of people at EVMC and come to understand kind of not only more about the industry, but more about the people within it and feel comfortable, that would be something that I would love to be able to help other people to do at the conference too.
And, you know, I just want to say that, you know, you mastered that, because I am somebody who is very, very, I think I feel the same way you do. I feel like I'm an introvert, and I don't like to, you know, I have no problem getting up in front of on a microphone in front of 10,000 people and running some kind of goofy halftime contest. But to go up and talk to somebody one-on-one or to go introduce myself to people, I struggled with. But from the time that you set the table, you kind of built that in. And to me, when I go to, you know, conferences or events, specifically EVMC now, I just kind of get out of my comfort zone a little bit. And I think it all started with you. So thank you for kind of paving that path for so many of us.
Oh, thank you. That's amazing to hear. No, I think it's that the longer you're around, the more you understand that it's a mindset and you have a little bit of control over that mindset. And, you know, understanding, especially if you have people who are guiding you in that right direction, to just be open.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's absolutely a mindset, because I can really build myself up with social anxiety sometimes.
And we also hear so much about people, myself, I'm sure I fall into one of these buckets, you know, that are, what do they say, like the introverted extrovert or the extroverted introvert, you know, very few, I feel like people are all one or the other. And sometimes people who will be comfortable talking in front of 10,000 people aren't comfortable talking with five people they don't know. They're almost more, I think I am that way. And I'm another one of those people that probably we get around each other at EVMC and it's just this like social hour and everyone's very outgoing and we're all sort of have this energy. But it's funny, if I were to go to any other conference and be in a room with, you know, 40 people I didn't know, I would be very nervous about it. But at EAMC or EVMC rather, you put me in a room with 40 people that I know are working on, you know, similar things to me, I'm ready to go. You know, it's kind of, it's interesting. It's very, But I think you have played such a critical role in welcoming people like that who, you know, like to Dave's point, you know, he was one of those first timers. I was one of those first timers. And now, you know, he's a former president. You know, I was on the
board. We're all getting a little older.
I know, but I think you've played such an important role in that.
Oh, that makes me feel great because I feel like I've kind of watched the two of you come in after my first, you know, years at the conference. And again, really just taken a hold of the conference with both hands and jumped in and done really great things for it. And I've seen you both grow as well. I mean, and just even just look at this podcast, right? I think I remember the days where the two of you just, this was an idea that you were chatting about. Right. And to, right. You know, to be here now and you have taken the talent that you have, but also the effort that it takes and the time that you have to carve out to do this and to have done it so well. And I know you all have just celebrated, what, 100 episodes?
100 episodes.
Yeah. So, you know, congrats on that. And, you know, to think that, you know, that's really gratifying, right? You know, when you're involved in something and you feel like whether it's mentorship or leadership at a conference that you've had a small hand in that for anyone, that's a really great feeling to have. And, you know, again, it's like little tips and tricks, right? Things that you can tell yourself that maybe you share with other people, you know, and we always told people at the conference, you know, there are always a large percentage of people at the conference are new. So remember that. Don't go into the room and think I'm the only one that doesn't know anybody. The trick is to remember you're not. And right. So to kind of think of those things and pass those messages along in the hopes that they help other people well is really gratifying.
You can see why Tammy is a not only you know a member of our EVMC team for many years, but also a winner of the Gigi Award of Excellence back at the conference in Seattle. So, Tammy, let's talk a little bit more about you. Let's get into your history because you know it's been a quarter of a century of this business for you. I know you're there at IMG, so let's just kind of break down some of this a little bit for folks who aren't familiar with IMG. How would you describe it?
Oh, well, I mean, IMG was really started right with Mark McCormick and Arnold Palmer as a kind of a client management, sports management business and grew to include TV production, event production, and, you know, and presented that and rolled it out in a very new way that was able to grow and expand so quickly and internationally. And, you know, it has continued on at its essence and grown so exponentially to include IMG fashion and so many other things. But, you know, we have fallen under different ownership umbrellas over the years since Mr. McCormick's passing. And so there's been a lot of change in that regard, kind of falling under Forceman Little for a while, then WME. We now fall under the Endeavor umbrella, which kind of is, you know, so many other now events fall under from UFC and WWE to PBR, IMG. So, you know, it's really, there's been a lot of change, but a lot of growth and opportunity and really just expansion in the client management, event production, television production space.
I would have to imagine that there's huge advantages when working for a company that does touch so many different areas. You know, like typically probably many people, they're working for one area. If they have to reach out to talent, if they have to reach out to this other promoter, if they have to reach out to someone for a fashion, you know, thing that maybe they're overlapping and, you know, you're going to have an ice skater go to some fashion show or something. That's maybe tough because you're maybe making this sell, but to have IMG be so far reaching and having kind of a footprint in so many different areas, is that make it a lot easier because you're sort of like reaching out to a coworker in many aspects? You know, you're able to be like, yeah, I'm a part of the family. And, you know, how do we collaborate and make this work for both of us?
Yeah, absolutely it does. And I think there have been challenges over the years, especially in transition from one move to the next that have been made. And so new people come in and out, and it's how do you take something that is so all-encompassing and that it has so many moving parts and that is in offices all over the world, and how do you create that feeling of synergy and kind of, you know, that everyone's a colleague and all of this opportunity can be a resource for everyone else within it. And I think there have been challenges with that in the past along the way, but particularly in the last you know, 5 years or so. And especially there's been a push in the last couple years that, you know, corporately, they're kind of calling it the flywheel. And that's exactly the essence of what they have been trying to promote and impress upon all of us, is to remember that you, however small your piece, you're a part of this greater whole. And it's when we are all working together and using each other as resources and funneling opportunities and chatting and sharing ideas together, is when the most opportunity can be created.
That's no small ask, right?
But it no, makes for sense. Sure. Like I said, so many players. I think, like I said, of late, really, especially because sometimes I feel like, you know, it's really easy to be in your own little world. There's a lot of work to get done. There's deadlines. You get in your little bubble sometimes, sure, right? So it's really nice, you know, particularly when you have, you know, communications and emails and town hall video recordings that, you know, are available to the whole company, where, you know, really the leadership is coming out and saying, remember, this is the broad who we are. Let's collectively maximize this opportunity.
You know, I'm glad you talk about that, because I think so often it's a challenge for us. We had, you know, even just in our building, sometimes we can get so siloed into what we do. And you know, even yesterday we had a meeting where instead of, you know, everybody kind of giving updates, we said, hey, let's take a step back and look at our last event, and everybody go around the room and tell us where your struggle point was for your department. And when you understand what other people are struggling with and their other challenges beyond what you're dealing with, it helps you understand how to work with them a little better. And I think way too often we do live in our own little silos, and anything we can do to break out. So it's nice that they encourage that.
For sure.
Specifically, your world revolves around Stars on Ice. And believe it or not, there's somebody listening right now who has never been to Stars on Ice. So despite all your hard efforts, talk to us about that person. Tell us a little about Stars on Ice, its history, and your role there.
Well, I think, you know, one of the interesting things about the story of Stars on Ice is that it was created by IMG along with Scott Hamilton after he won his Olympic gold medal and really didn't have opportunity or a lot of places to take that talent and work. There were things like ice shows that would be more character driven. There were things like Icecapades, which had more female skaters than males. And he found himself having just achieved, you know, one of his life's dreams and goals, and didn't, you know, wasn't sure, you know, what would be next. And they created a platform for, you know, people who had really just, you know, who had become the best of the best, and to take that really kind of to a new space and a performing space. So, you know, I think it's interesting to realize, like so many things in life, that sometimes it's a moment where a door is closing that can present, you know, a really great opportunity. And so that's how it all began. And, you know, like I said, you've referenced, I've been here with IMG since 99. In a lot of different roles.
I think that is such an important note, is, you know, seeing something created, you know, sometimes it's like out of necessity, you have ingenuity, or, you know, if there's no path in front of you, you make your own path. And I think for so many of these athletes in so many sports, you know, obviously you have these ones like maybe professional basketball, where there's a pretty easy path, or, you know, not an easy path, but a path laid out to where if you're interested in being a professional basketball player, you can follow that from when you're a kid all the way up until, you know, your career might end and maybe you're going to Europe or elsewhere. But some of these other sports don't quite have that. And you're seeing some of those grow now. I know a lot of arenas now have a professional, I think it's a professional volleyball team or something like that. And you're seeing arena football and other things. So I love that there was this sort of like realization of, you know, I've just completed this incredible, you know, career and, you know, gone to the Olympics. And what does that look like for me, but also the people that are behind him? You know, it's like, you know, how can I provide this platform for people that are really some of these best athletes in the world, and they're sort of forced into retirement or finding other careers? And I love that it really was born from this sort of need for showcasing these incredible skaters.
Absolutely. You know, he absolutely did. You know, you summed it up very well, right? He created a place where these athletes could go and take their career in a different direction, but still follow their passion and to be able to perform. And, you know, now for well over three decades, you know, there are skaters from all over the world who have been able to tour the world and continue to do what they love, even though they're no longer an amateur athlete who's competing, you know, at a world or international level.
Yeah. And how much does that grow the sport itself too, right? Now you're touring around, you're showcasing to people of all ages, including these little kids that maybe go see a Stars on Ice, and then they inspires them to go to their local, you know, ice center or something, start skating. And then, you know, so it's not only a great thing for the skaters themselves, but it really helps, you know, promote the sport and grow it from a much smaller age.
Absolutely. And it's been around long enough now that we actually have skaters who have skated in the tour who have told that story, that they were once the kid in the audience.
That's great. Yeah.
Who, you know, said, yeah, Mom, I can do that. I want to do that. And then have come back full circle to be in our past and have told that story, which, you know, is a testament, I think, to the brand and what they were able to create all those years ago.
Let's talk about that title there, Senior Director of Winter Sports and Event Director. Are those two different jobs kind of combined? I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of crossover, but what does that actually mean? What do you do, Tammy?
I know, it's a bit of a catch-all, right? and I mean that in the best way, right? Because I think when you, as you both know, when you are working in the event industry, it's not a situation where you're able to have a team of people or sometimes even one person to handle each specific task, right? You have a group of people and everybody crosses over to help with all the little pieces and parts in all the ways that they can. So, you know, I've really had a chance, I think, over the years. And I think it speaks to why I've never gotten bored, you know, having started doing this back in 99 and still to be doing it all these years later, I think is in part because I've been able to touch and work within so many different parts of the industry, from, you know, whether it would be creating letters to proofing ad slicks, to thinking about grassroots ideas, to being on tour, thinking about what group sales means, thinking about what I'm doing in the marketing space, but also being on site for the show and knowing what that means for the operations people, all the little pieces and parts. I booked hotels for the tour, signed hotel contracts. And I think it's been the chance to do all those things and to work both in the office to know what that's like to be there every morning and every evening. But then also I've had a chance to go out on the road with the tour and travel by plane and on tour bus and all of these different things that it's changed it up, you know, on a regular basis in so many different ways that it's kept it interesting and exciting for all of these years. And it's really kind of the chance to work, whether it's both in the marketing space or the event actual production and execution space, that's really made it fun.
Basically everything short of you lacing up and doing a triple axle.
Yes, and that is never going to happen.
Are you an ice skater at all? Have you ever? Do you ever strap on the skates?
100% no.
Oh, that's your next challenge.
Oh, it would be a challenge. I actually grew up dancing. From the music to the choreography to the lines and the, you know, all of that, the production is definitely in my wheelhouse. I taught dance to little kids, adults for a very long time. So all of that is in the wheelhouse, and that background is probably part of kind of the appeal of the show for sure, but not a skater. Nope.
You mentioned, you know, that kind of ability to work from home, work from the office, and work on the road. You know, as touring. So talk to us about what you love and also what you're challenged by with, you know, those kind of three options.
Well, I love these days even if it's just slightly increased flexibility to work where you are, or to work from home, if it's just one day a week or whatever that might be, particularly for people who are in this industry. And I've always also seen it, not just from the promoter side, but you know, you have both been at arenas, and I've seen friends and colleagues there who, you know, you're there all the time. You're there during office hours. You're there in the evenings because that's when your events are. You're there on the weekends because that's when their events are going on. You're there sometimes on holidays because that's when there are events going on. And, you know, and I remember thinking, like, you know, I want these people to have a life, to, you know, do homework with their kids some night, or, you know, make sure that they're at their, you know, games, or, you know, at the activities of their kids. And like, when do they have that space? And I think to even, you know, now one of the silver linings of COVID is that while I think we do still really value and understand the importance of being in an office and collaborating, that there is some understanding that with the technology, the way that it is today, you do have the ability to work, you know, from home in some other places that give you the flexibility to maybe do a little bit more of those things that, you know, in this industry, sometimes you were missing. Right. So I love that opportunity to be from home. Let's see the other parts of the question. Well, I think my biggest challenge while working from the road was the fact that, as you spoke to, I've had responsibilities that were related to being on the road. So if I was booking the hotels for the tour and I was on the road, I'd be checking everybody in and getting everybody off the bus and, you know, doing all those things that you would do on the road. But at the same time, I never didn't have the marketing responsibilities. So I also had that kind of more 9 to 5, everybody's in the office expecting you to answer calls, answer emails in a timely fashion. And when you were doing both, and especially I noticed when you were on a different coast, is when I was really challenged. So sure, I would be maybe, you know, I would be maybe on the West Coast and we would finish a show and it'd be 11:30 or so or midnight. And we would take off on a bus for the next city. And we might get in at, depended how long the drive was. Sometimes the drive was only an hour or two. Sometimes the drive was 4 or 5 and you're closer to morning when you get there, but you get everybody off the bus, you hand out the keys, you get everybody in their rooms. And it's almost time for people to wake up and start working on the West Coast, let alone the East Coast, when people are already calling, wondering where you are and why you haven't answered email yet. And so that was definitely a challenge, you know, kind of doing both of those things at the same time and considering time zone challenges. That was a big one. That was probably my biggest one on the road. But the obviously, you know, the other side of that is really just how interesting it is and how fun it is to travel with a group of people who are fun to be with to so many places that you maybe wouldn't have otherwise ever gone if you weren't doing kind of this, you know, road trip. And we've had tours of various lengths, but there were years where we were doing 60 cities in the U.S. in a, you know, in a couple month period alone. So it was a lot of time in a lot of places, but you really got to kind of, you know, sample all kinds of different foods, see all the different landscapes. And so the travel part of it, when you're someone who likes to travel, I found that to be a lot of fun.
Have you done much international travel? I know you've done some, right, with the tours, or have there been a lot of dates there that you've bounced around to?
I have done a little. I haven't done a lot. The U.S. was the place where the tour was rolled out first, but then it wasn't that long after that it was rolled out in Canada. And that's the place where we maybe do the most travel on an annual basis, is that we're also touring Canada every year. And so
they like ice up in Canada, you know, absolutely. I've been told. Yeah.
No, to go from east to west, that it's a beautiful country, and to kind of see the different places and spaces from east to west has been really fun. But we've also the division can be involved in other events and other things. And there have been shows that have taken us, and certainly skating and the popularity of it has allowed us to travel internationally. And, you know, one of the places that was really different and really fun to go to, that both Stars goes to, and we had some other events and some dance shows that we worked on, is Japan. So that's been a really cool place to kind of get to know a little better through work.
What is the like to market a show in Japan? You know, obviously it's something that's, do they have a different type of appetite for live events? How are you reaching people? How are you even figuring out where to start?
Well, I think it goes back to what we were speaking to earlier, is that really helps when you have, corporately resources, and we have an office there. So that's the place where we start, right? So our team here is working hand in hand with the team over there, who has, you know, established relationships and information on the ground that we have at our fingertips that we wouldn't otherwise. So that's certainly the starting space. And it's really, it's given us a chance, the tour, and especially even skating, it's a bit cyclical, right? And it goes up and down a bit with the Olympic cycle, where there might be a heightened interest right after, and then it might go down a bit as you come down and gear up for the next, winter or summer games, depending on what sports you're working with. Being able to take advantage of a market, for example, maybe it's not kind of at its height of popularity that it once was in one country, but it's really selling, really well in another, has, given us some ability to make up in one place, maybe where we're not seeing the sales that we want in another in that same time period.
You have spent more than a few years of your life working on Stars on Ice. And as you mentioned, it's obviously just like what is with gymnastics, it's cyclical depending on, obviously the Olympic years are big, or even certain names that are bigger draws at times than others. How do you not, I know that so often, as Paul and I have discussed in the past, we take on the arena as our identity so many times, or our jobs as our identity. And when you're having a year where maybe things aren't going as well, how do you not take that completely personally? Like, do you always, like, when a show is struggling, are you worried about it, or are you able to just kind of treat it as a, like you said, it all kind of balances out?
No, you definitely, it definitely gets to you. And you can have other, right? You can have other people also coming to you and saying, what are you doing? Why isn't you doing this? What more can you be doing? What more? So you're already feeling it, right? You're already feeling it. And then somebody else is asking it, and rightfully so, on from all sides, even from your own, to be asking yourself the hard questions, right? What are we doing? What stone has not yet been turned over? But I think it's been really important to understand that, I feel like over the years more and more that my job is really to work hard and maximize our opportunities, whatever situation we're in, and to realize that there are a lot of external factors that affect sales that have nothing to do with me. And you've already, Dave, you just kind of spoke to some of them right away. For example, you could have, it's like a team, right? And the venues all have teams. It's the difference between, what your sales are, both for tickets, for merch, for concessions, all of that, for a team that's struggling versus a team that's winning and is poised to win a championship, and what those sales feel like. Yeah. The marketer at that venue is not controlling the strength of the team, but they're, they're directly involved in what those sales results are. And there's so much that's kind of outside of it. So I've really kind of come to look at it as whether the sales are struggling or whether they're exceeding expectations, and you're super excited every night when you go out and look at the bowl and you see how many people there are there, or you realize that there aren't any seats left to sell, that really my job is the same. And that's to maximize the opportunity and to maximize the sales, whatever situation we're in. And so you just kind of put your head down and work hard, and keep the focus on that, and you kind of tune the rest of it out, because the work is what you can control.
Yeah, I love that, the setting expectations to kind of a realistic level, and then you're judging based off of that, because I would find myself telling, different people in booking this or whatever, but, in marketing, you could let every 100% of the people in a market know about a show, but you can't force them to pull the money out of their wallet and buy a ticket. So you could have done everything under the moon to, make sure everyone knew this show was coming and it's the greatest show ever, but whether they're going to spend the money, whether they're feeling a pull in another direction, there's a lot of external things you can't control. And so, you know, it is tough because, like you have both said, we often wear this weight on our shoulders on how shows do, and sometimes it's really probably unfairly placed there.
Well, and I think what's interesting, and Paul, I'm sure that you have felt it, is that often, regardless of what it might look like from the outside looking in, you know, a sales team or a marketing team is probably working far, far more and a lot harder on the shows that aren't selling well.
Yeah.
Right. And so there's kind of this, like, for a second, it seems like, oh, well, this is selling really well. You must be doing all the right things. Well, it might just be selling well because it's Taylor or
right.
No one has to, you know, you don't have anybody out there having to say, hey, she's coming. Do you want to get a ticket? You're not. Sometimes it's the ones that are the struggle where you're actually working the hardest anyway, organically, because you have to.
Mm-hmm. Tammy, let's go back to 1988. And you are a freshman, University of Akron. Did you know you wanted to get into the marketing in this whole crazy live entertainment world?
Absolutely not. Nope.
What were you originally going to do? Were you dance focused?
I was very dance focused out of high school going into college. I went to Akron U, and one of the reasons I went is that I hadn't declared a major, but they had an excellent dance program with an in-house company. So I knew that I would get to do that. And it was actually... was a great focus to have at the time, not having declared a major, because it gave me a place to go every morning. Like, I started my mornings Monday through Friday, every morning, 8 a.m. in college with ballet technique class for 2 hours. So you really thought twice about what you were doing the night before when you knew at 7 a.m.
Sure.
You for 2 hours of that. And obviously kept me in really good shape during school because I took all kinds of dance courses, including, I mean, you know, all different disciplines from modern to jazz, but also dance history. And it also provided a space for a great college job. I ended up teaching dance. So I taught dance to all ages, but loved the little ones the most. And it was a fantastic job to have during college. It was really fun. And I was working with music and choreography and kids, but it taught you also so many things about dealing with people and parents and managing a business and working with the studio owners, which really created, you know, really a lot of great experience just from kind of having moved a little bit down that path. But I did eventually declare that I wanted to get a degree in psychology, which again, I did that because I really enjoyed the courses. Just like I had enjoyed dance and I enjoyed teaching, I loved everything about my psychology courses in school. And I think I could have done that too. And I think everything that I learned, perhaps not in an direct, but definitely an indirect, indirect kind of way, you use those things all the time. You know, just thinking about behavior and understanding people, you know, and organizational psychology that helps you within a corporation, all of those kinds of things, again, really helpful, but fully indirect path to
no wonder get to, you're in marketing. You're
right,
you know,
to get
you know
to
the
where
psychology
I
of the consumer, and you know, the you've worked with families before. I mean, you got all of it on the tool belt.
So it's kind of your volunteer work that actually led you into the entertainment side.
Yes, it was. So it was the same time frame during college where I started volunteering for events. I had some family and some friends who had businesses, and they were doing things like celebrity charity golf tournaments and baseball fantasy camps. And, you know, really looking back, some really fun events that they put together, and they just needed help. And I helped. And I think that's when I started to kind of feel the path in a way, but again, in a really indirect way, because I was really following the path that I think that I was following at that time is doing what I enjoyed to do. And I didn't know where necessarily at the beginning, where all of it was going to take me. I was dancing and teaching because I love that. I kind of pursued the psychology path and those courses because I really enjoyed them. And so this is kind of where it all started, really the event business for me, is that I was helping and I realized how much I enjoyed it. And as you know, event days are long. So you know you enjoy something when you can wake up at the crack of dawn to start prepping for it, and you're still at the end of the night cleaning up from it. With all of the fires you put out during the day and all the things you had to address, when you really, at the end of the day, are exhausted, but you had a blast.
You're probably thinking this is so much easier than getting up at 6 a.m. and doing ballet for 2 hours. So, if I can survive that, I can do a production meeting or something.
That's right. That's right. And I think, again, it's similar to what I've been able to do here. It's kind of the openness and willingness to want to learn and to do anything. And I think, even just listening to so many of your other podcasts, I definitely think there's this common core of those of us in this business who have had that kind of curiosity and interest and excitement about this industry, where you just jump in with both feet and you'll do whatever it is that needs to be done. And when I started actually not just volunteering, but some of these companies and people that I had been volunteering for, it just kind of organically happened that they started asking me to work. Can you do this? Can you do that? And I distinctly remember doing grassroots marketing at a time when we still had typewriters and we still actually hard mailed people to a mailing list. And I typed labels, hundreds of labels, for 10 cents a label.
But that was the business. That was the business.
Right. And that's what's like, okay, well, the first thing you have to do is let these people know that particular event was a baseball fantasy camp. And so you were, it was a grassroots opportunity to hit baseball organizations at a child and kind of a softball organization level locally and in any of the local markets that you needed to. And so, that was how you started that process reaching out. So that's what we did.
So tell me about how you got involved with IMG.
Well, I had been doing, in helping with these events, I ended up working with some people who worked in baseball, working on some of these contracted events and for some of the fantasy camps and things like that. And so I ended up working the transition between that entry and the entry to IMG was doing some contracted events with the Yankees, where I was able to, really meet a lot of people and get a better feel for just the reach and opportunity really within the industry and the large scale with which some of these things happened. So that was really a great experience working on things like as small as kind of Yankee Day at the Florida State Fair when they were down at spring training, or doing the New York Yankee Fan Festival, where we would bring the entire team in for 3 days and they would sign autographs for 3 days, bringing the team in shifts and pulling in the Yankee alumni and all of the players and rolling in, merchandise and silent auctions and all of these other opportunities and dealing with the talent and union labor in New York City and exposure exposure to so many other things on a bigger and broader scale than I had to that point, which was really a great experience. But I started then working the whole time. I grew up in Ohio. I still lived in Ohio, but I was spending a lot of time working in the New York area and in Florida, where the Yankees did spring training. So I was traveling. And then if I had to travel from there, I was traveling not even from home. And I remember once kind of being in the New York area in winter, but spring training was started and they said, well, let's go down there and help with this. And I actually had to have some of my summer things shipped from Ohio because I had winter stuff in New York, but I wasn't even near my own closet to, bring short sleeve shirts down there. And so there was a kind of a thought process that if I wasn't going to make a move from Ohio yet at that point, what good opportunities in the event industry, are a little closer to home. And at that time, IMG's world headquarters was actually in Cleveland, Ohio.
So obviously that got you in the door. And then talk to us about, that first job you had there and then kind of how you got to where you are now.
Well, I went in and because again, they were already reaching across agent and client management TV production and event production. So they certainly had a lot going on across the scope of events. And I went in, you know, really for a general interview as opposed to something for, you know, one specific opening for something that they were looking for a person to fill a specific opening. And so I, you know, I really kind of went in and did that interview and said, I'm just here because I have this event experience, but, you know, Ohio has been my home base. And here you are right in my backyard, this great company, you know, and I want you to keep me in mind for, you know, whatever opportunities fit my background and experience. And then what, I didn't even know if there was anything at that time. And it really wasn't that much longer after that, a few weeks maybe, that there was an opening just serendipitously, right? As they say, right? And the opening was with Stars on Ice. And so that's when I went back and actually did the full set rounds of interviews for this is the specific opening, what's your background? And everybody kind of fleshed it out. And that's kind of where I started. And, I, you know, we talked a little bit at the start that really, you know, similar to all of the other things that I started to do, you just started plugging away at all of the small things. But it dates me a little bit to, I really... in anticipation of talking with you guys, you think back to what you did at the beginning and to think about the fact that we were, our creative department was printing ad slicks that would dry laying out all over desks. And we were FedExing them to newspapers all over North America and, you know, doing things like that.
It's hard for people to understand what those days were like.
Right? I thought, like, wow, there are people listening that have no idea what it's like.
These kids and their new age technology.
Right? And the instantaneous ability to click a button and send a digital, you know, formatted ad to someone on the other side of the world is really incredible. You know, but those are the kinds of things that, you know, we were taking tapes, TV spot tapes, and we were FedExing them to TV stations and, you know, all of this kind of in-house work when it started to when you didn't even have yet, you know, the space where all people had computers and followed blogs, let alone social media. So, you know, I think it's been really cool. And again, it speaks to another reason why if you're open to new things and learning, it's not as surprising that you can stay in one space and not get bored, because think of the change that we have all had to embrace, you know, in our jobs by simply the world, you know, making progress and moving at a speed that's so quickly that you have to embrace it or you're somewhat left behind.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. I mean, we sometimes we'll talk with people on here and it does seem to be there's some people that will stay with one company for a while and other ones will bounce markets or bounce companies. And you've obviously been there since you got that first, you know, interview. What is it about, you know, Stars on Ice? Is it something that you, you know, if, when you took that job, would you be surprised to hear that you're still here 25 years later? Or is it something that you just, you know, fell in love with over the years and now you're like, I just can't see myself anywhere else. Like, this is such a passion project, you know, and obviously talking to people like Dave and I, we both have said multiple times that, you know, we love our markets, you know, it's kind of some, you know, there are people that are kind of more tied to moving markets and that's totally fine. And other people that are sort of like really happy where they're at and sort of staying and investing in the time in a company or a place. But, you know, what's that reflection been like, you know, having been there?
Okay, let me think. So many questions in there.
I know. Do you take notes?
I was trying to listen really hard. I don't know that I ever would have said at the time, yeah, that 20 to 25 years later, I would still be in the same space. And it's not to say that I wasn't thinking forward and that I don't plan ahead because I am a planner by nature. But I'm not sure I was thinking that far ahead. You know, you get in this new space and sometimes you're so excited for the start of it, right? You just jump in and all of a sudden you're immersed in it. And I feel like that's kind of where, you know, where I was at the time. It's like, oh my gosh, what can I do? And what can I learn? And if I did this, then I could do that. And then if I handled this, I could go there. And, you know, and you just find yourself doing all the things. And when you enjoy the work, that's such a large part of it. But I do feel like then, once you kind of establish some roots where you've been planted for the time. But yes, you definitely become a little more tied to what you're working on, and you have this vested interest in, you know, in what you're doing, and you come to care about the brand, and, you know, not just knowing that your job is to represent it well, but you really care about whether it's represented well and how right. it's reflected, and what, especially when you work within it and you come to know the people within it and you see, you know, how good those people are and how hard they work. Like, you want other people to know that. You would never want to put anything out in any way that reflected anything other than that. And so, you know, over the years, when things have rolled out and, you know, we end up with social media, and then this thing called the hashtag is invented, and you're like, it was really, really easy for me to automatically say SOI family. That's our hashtag, right? That's our hashtag, because that's who we are. When we're on the road, we treat these people like we're family. We have staff on the road who, you know, you become very close to, and, you know, ultimately, it could be a whole nother podcast of, but, you know, I met my husband through this industry, and he also works at this company with this tour. So for our household, I mean, it really, truly, literally and figuratively becomes part of your family, and you're able to really learn some really cool things about such a diverse group of people when you open it up to not only the people in your office space, but the crew who goes out on the road with you, and the people who design the lights, and the people who know how to run the trucks. And then on top of it, you get to meet these Olympic athletes who, after all these years, are much farther away from my age than when I started in this business. And you're able to, regardless of the fact that now most of them are so much younger than I am, but you hear them speak to young people, and you're able to learn lessons yourself about the questions that little kids will ask these skaters, and the way they talk about navigating their own challenges, and how important that is, and how the landscape of even professional sports and Olympic sports has changed, and the focus has shifted, I think, in such a wonderful way toward understanding that there's the physical aspect, but there's the mental health aspect of all of this.
Absolutely.
And how do you deal with the challenges of not just physically, and ice skating, I think, has been such a wonderful metaphor to think about this in, but not just physically getting up when you fall, and understanding if you have an injury from that fall, a physical injury, but mentally in life, in skating, in life, how do you physically get up when what just happened is not what you wanted to happen? And I think there are so many opportunities to learn and to be inspired within that, that it's hard to not be affected in your life by that.
Tammy, you mentioned your family, you know, your husband, and let's talk about, because I know your family's been a big part of you, and you've done a great job of incorporating them kind of into your obviously your work life with your husband, but your the whole family. So talk to us, give us a little overview of everybody.
Well, my husband, obviously, well, he works in the industry. He does work in Stars. He produces the tour. And we have a son who is now a middle schooler, who has therefore grown up in this industry. He was born in November, and I think he was at his first show by December of that same year. and has kind of just by default, in a really cool kind of way, learned by just being around, you know, as you both know, the really fun and cool environment of events, and has been able to learn not only so many different things. He's 12 now, and he will jump in backstage and do anything. He will count merch. He will roll cable for the crew. We had a show about a season ago, we had a show where the truck didn't, we had some issues. There were issues that happened, didn't get there in time. He was ripping seams. We were ripping seams out of costumes to re-sew. It was something that had to be done that day, but we thought we would have all day, but the trucks didn't get there. He wears the headset and listens to everybody make the calls for the spotlights. And so, it's been really, really fun for us to see him grow and experience this and be a gamer, open to trying and doing. But I think he's also learned a really valuable lesson in what it means to be a part of a team. And when you're to, whether it's your family or your work family, when the team needs something, everybody jumps in and pitches in together. And it's the kind of the show must go on type mentality, right? But you all just do what needs to be done, no matter what that is. And to kind of see that in action, I don't know. I hope when he grows up, whatever he chooses to do in his life that makes him happy, I hope he's able to look back on some of those times and think that they were both really fun, but also valuable in a way for him.
I'm sure he will.
Is he an ice skater at all? Did he ever get on the ice?
He does not skate either. And maybe that's my fault. Because
if only he would have opportunities.
Yeah, right.
Well, and the skaters do their best to encourage him and to get him out there on the ice sometimes too. But he's super active and athletic. And, you know, I think a great, responsible, curious student, first and foremost, which is wonderful to see and to kind of be able to kind of guide him along that path. But he doesn't even really need a lot of guidance because he's really disciplined on his own. But he's got so many interests. He plays right now soccer, tennis, basketball, baseball, very athletic, and keeps us really, really, really busy in a wonderful way.
Well, I know you are busy in many ways, some wonderful, not so wonderful. So we're going to wrap things up here. But before we do, I want to hit you with our fast five. It's five quick questions, just looking for your short, immediate response. First up, do you remember your very first concert?
Yes, I do. Again, I'm going to date myself. It was Donnie and Marie Osmond.
Ah, that's great. We actually announced a Donny Osmond show just yesterday for our theater. So he's still out there on the road.
Where did you see the show? Where was the show at?
I believe it might have been, it was definitely in Ohio and perhaps the Richmond Coliseum, which was the home of the Cavs where it is now is maybe where it was. But I was so young. Really young for a concert experience. So I went with my grandmother, if that doesn't even put the cherry on the top of the story.
Yeah, perfect.
Here you go. To date myself, I actually had a lengthy conversation with Marie Osmond one time backstage when she was trying to decide if she was going to build a Twitter account or not. She was trying to decide if this was going to be a thing or not.
Well, it's incredible, right? That they're still doing what they're doing.
And it's a great, they're still awesome. It's still a great live show. Do you have an all-time favorite concert?
That's a hard one. I'll go with the last one I went to, which was Taylor Swift, just in for the entire, not just the concert, but as an event person, the entire concert experience from appreciating that it started perfectly on time. And we all know what that can mean sometimes for an event night, right? But just not being able to sell enough merch, not being able to make enough of it. She can't make enough of it or have enough of it there to keep it in stock. Same with tickets. You can't print enough tickets for this. And that kind of just the entire pop cultural phenomena that has been, you know, for the last year or so was just kind of a cool thing to be a part of that experience.
Oh, what's your favorite home-cooked meal? A rare night when you get to actually sit down with the family, have dinner at home. What's your personal favorite?
Italian, for sure. Definitely a pasta, perhaps some pizza mixed in there. Definitely has to include dessert, though.
How about your favorite vacation getaway?
Ooh, I love to travel. So that's a big one.
Right.
Caribbean.
Last question for you, and I'm going to mix this one up from our usual just a little bit. You actually somehow are magically granted the powers to do an amazing solo skate.
Wow, I love this.
And you're taking the ice for one song. What is the song that you skate to that sums up the Tammy Allen experience?
I'm taking a different direction. My first thought was like running through my head of like what, because I dance and I love just a good dance beat and a really upbeat kind of song. I started running like what would be a good dance song, but I'm going to go in a completely different direction if it's like a like about me, my life summary, and say Seasons of Love from Rent.
Very nice. That's a great song choice.
Yeah.
Love that. Tammy, if people want to follow Stars on Ice or find you out in the internet world these days, well, plug anything you can you want to throw out there.
Yeah, it's pretty simple for Stars, right? We're, you know, on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and TikTok, just at Stars and Ice, and website is starsandice.com, and starsandice.ca for the other side of the border. And I'm out there, whether it be on social or LinkedIn, at Tammy Allen.
Just that easy. Tammy, thank you so much for making the time today. Always really enjoy talking to you and really getting to know you over the years and everything you've done for EAMC and EVMC.
Well, thank you so much for having me. And I look forward to seeing you both in person at the next conference in Denver.
Likewise.
And a big thanks to everybody for listening to this episode of Adventures in Venueland. Remember, you can subscribe and find more episodes wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. We do love your 5-star reviews. It helps others find us. Until the next adventure, I'm Dave Rettelberger.
And I'm Paul Hooper. Thanks for listening, everyone. We'll see you on the next one.
Adventures in Venueland is a side project of the Event and Venue Marketing Conference, a marketing conference that brings together diversified event and venue professionals to cultivate education, collaboration, and innovation for the growing sports and live entertainment industry. Find out more at eventvenuemarketing.com.
Audio editing and mixing by Camille Faulkner.
Design and digital advertising by Megan Ebeck.
Copywriting and publicity by Samantha Marker.
Guest booking and brand strategies by Paul Hooper.
Guest research by Dave Rettelberger.
Marketing strategies by Paul Hooper, Megan Ebeck, and Samantha Marker. Thanks for joining us. Until the next adventure.